Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf at Adam. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I am the tech editor here at HowStuffWorks.com. And as usual, I have managed to get our senior writer, Jonathan Strickland, to nearly laugh, but not quite.
Ever since I was a young boy, I played the silver ball.
Yes, but it's harder to do that these days.
It is. It's a lot harder to find them.
It's a whole lot harder to find them.
So those of you guys and gals who are around the age of your beloved hosts may already have picked up on what we're about to talk about. You youngsters out there may or may not know, we're going to talk about pinball machines.
Yes.
Something that I am actually very enthusiastic about. I love pinball.
Yes, I agree. I grew up playing pinball.
It's a great game. And it was sort of the precursor to the arcade machine, the video game. Pinball was what video games were before there were video games. And then they were, they kind of existed side by side video games for a while. But as arcades died out, so did pinball machines. Partly because, in fact, I would say in large part because they have lots and lots of parts and you got to do a lot of maintenance to keep them running in good condition.
Plus I have the real reason why pinball machines are so hard to find now, but
hardly anyone's making them.
Besides there's no one making them besides Stern.
Yeah,
at least not in the United States. But,
yeah.
I was going to get into that after we talked a little bit about so what you normally do the history of the pinball machine.
I was going to do that.
Okay. Actually, you could argue that pinball machines in their earliest form weren't really techie at all because they were simply mechanical.
Right. And in fact, if you want to go before pinball machines proper, it all depends on how you define a pinball machine, right?
Yeah. I mean, the earliest pinball machines were basically a piece of wood with some pins. They were a lot more vertical than they are now.
Yeah. And you would drop a ball down from the top and they would plunk down along the pins and then eventually land somewhere at the bottom.
Yes. Actually, if you've ever seen the Japanese phenomenon pachinko is very similar to what the earlier pinball machines were here in the United States, because they were they're seriously gravity driven. They're a lot more upright. You hang them on the wall, basically.
Yeah. So, for instance, a precursor to the pinball machine was the Bagatelle.
Yes.
The Bagatelle was a device where it looked a lot like a pinball machine. Usually it was a cabinet that was higher on one end than the other. Mm-hmm. Thus you have introduced the element of gravity into the game.
Yes.
And you would use probably a plunger or perhaps a lever of some sort to maneuver a ball so that it rolls from the top to the bottom. And it goes down a series of various pegs, like we had mentioned before, until it lands in a slotted spot at the bottom, which would have a score associated with it. And mm-hmm. that's how you would accumulate points. There's not really any skill involved. It's all luck.
Pretty much.
So this device gave way to other similar devices. Now, we have an article on our site about how pinball machines work, in which we state that the first pinball game was Humpty Dumpty by Gottlieb in 1947. Now, that's something that some people would argue is not entirely true.
I would argue that that is not entirely true.
Now, I think I know the reason why we stated so in our article. It's mm-hmm. because Humpty Dumpty was the first machine that introduced flippers. So you have
they call them flippers. Flippers.
Yes. Yes.
Faster than lightning.
Oh wow. Now we've lost even some of the people our age.
Yeah. There's a dolphin in my pinball machine.
Right, exactly.
I'm sorry.
Pinball machine dolphin safe? So it was the first the Humpty Dumpty was the first game to introduce flippers, which allowed the player a chance to alter the course of the game.
Yeah,
kind
so you actually
really
well, that gives you an opportunity to interact with the game rather than just watching the ball move from the top of the playing surface to the bottom.
Right. Before that, people usually played would try and manipulate the game by nudging the machine and trying to get the ball to go one way other rather than another, which still, of course, happens with pinball machines, but we'll get into that.
Mm-hmm.
So that is probably why they call Humpty Dumpty the first pinball machine in the article, because, again, flippers, first time you got those. But you do have machines before that had pins that the ball would bounce off of, and those technically could also be called pinball machines.
Mm-hmm.
I think of Humpty Dumpty as the first one because when I think pinball machine, the flippers are definitely a part of that. I think of the others as variations, either
variations of Bagatelle.
Yeah, variations of Bagatelle or variations of the pinball machine, but not actually a pinball machine.
Yes.
So I go with Humpty Dumpty as the first one, even though I know there are some pinball fanatics out there who would argue that that's not entirely accurate.
I'm glad that there are still pinball fanatics out there, frankly, because
otherwise the game would have died out already.
Yeah.
And it's still coughing and wheezing. It's not doing great.
Yeah.
So let's, describe the anatomy of a pinball machine just in general terms. You've got the head or the back glass, back box section.
Yeah.
That's the section that's vertical that you you look at and usually has some pretty amazing art on it to attract the eye so that you go to that machine versus any other.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have the body or cabinet section of the machine. This is where the playing field is, where the ball comes out at the top and gravity pulls it toward the bottom. And then you use your various flippers and elements in the playing field to keep the ball going as much as possible and to rack up points.
Yes. Now, this is the reason you would want flippers anyway, and the reason that pinball machine is different from a Bagatelle is that at least in the age of electricity, the mid 20th century, electromechanical pinball machines came into being. And this is why, because otherwise there's no point in trying to get the ball except, this is headed for the 40 point slot. I'd rather it ended up in the 70 point slot.
Right.
So you want to keep the ball in play because the electromechanical games have a number of switches and buttons and bumpers and all kinds of other doodads that help you continue to accumulate more and more points as the game goes on.
Sure.
And they do this. These games were primarily before 1978 or so, based on what I was able to find out in the Internet Pinball Database. I didn't know there was an Internet Pinball Database.
I knew. I used to use that all the time.
It is a great resource, and I got a lot of valuable information about it, ipdb.com. And as a matter of fact, I got a lot of descriptions for things I didn't know what they were.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But on the playing field, I would say probably the biggest thing in all these games dating back quite some time now would be the bumpers.
Yeah, you've got the bumpers, and you've got a couple of – sometimes you would have some holes that the ball could fall into that would accumulate some points as well.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, the bumpers, and then toward the base of it, you would have the drain. That's mm-hmm. where the ball – when the ball goes through the drain, that means that play is usually over at that point.
Yes.
So your goal is to try and keep the ball out of the drain and in the playing field. So you've got the bumpers usually toward the top.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the flippers at the bottom. You might have some slingshots on either side. Those are the kind of triangular elements that you see near where the flippers are that have the really powerful bumper that'll knock the ball right back towards the top.
Mm-hmm.
So those are usually called slingshots, even though they're not really slinging. They're punching the ball as hard as they can. These elements all have something in common. They are controlled by, or they're powered by, something called a solenoid,
mm-hmm.
which is not a Decepticon. I'm so disappointed. I see these things and I'm like, wow, there's a Transformer in there. And sometimes there is, but it's not the kind of Transformer I'm thinking of.
Nope.
It's not even a GoBot.
So a solenoid is a coil. And it's used in all kinds of things.
Yeah.
But basically what happens is when there's electricity running through the solenoid, it causes a magnetic field, generates
right.
a magnetic field, which moves a piece of something, a piece of equipment.
Yeah, often there are two coils. There might be one in the center and one on the outside. And
right.
and what happens is you've got two magnetic fields that are the same, so they repel one another.
Mm-hmm.
And that pushes something out of the solenoid. And in this case, like with the flipper, when you press the buttons on the side of the pinball machine, it sends the electrical circuit, or it completes the electrical circuit, which then causes the solenoid to activate, which makes the flipper go up. What's interesting is that there are a couple different styles of flippers. There's some where if you hold the button down, the flipper will remain engaged, and the solenoid will still be poking out, essentially, when you release the button.
I like that type. Those are my favorite flippers.
And then there's the other kind where it has a timer on how long the button can be pressed down. It's usually pretty much an instantaneous thing. Like if you were to hold the button down, it wouldn't matter. The flipper would activate but then immediately stop, because it would just be like a quick on switch. And then until you release the button and press it again, the flipper would remain in the down position. And those are a lot harder to use for those of us who like to finesse the ball and juggle it in various ways.
Yes. Those were invented by someone evil.
Yes. Yes. Someone evil who wanted to make sure that we spent more and more nickels, dimes, quarters, whatever.
Yes. Now, active bumpers, there are two different kinds of bumpers.
Yes.
They're active and passive. The passive ones were used in the earlier machines, where basically when the ball would strike the bumper, it would register that it had hit and would give you the according number of points. Now, active bumpers use the solenoid to
bump back,
yeah, and it can shoot the ball across the playing field.
Right, right. There's a plunger inside the bumper that activates. And there's a little metal ring, which, you know, that's when the metal ball comes in contact with the metal ring,
mm-hmm.
then that's what activates it to activate the solenoid, and the plunger moves the bumper, and it propels the ball somewhere else on the playing field. Which is, you know, that's when you can get like maybe that there's often you'll see a configuration of three bumpers.
Mm-hmm.
Three is pretty common. I mean, you'll see others like maybe two or maybe as many as five or six.
Yeah.
But if you luck out, you can get the ball to bounce back and forth between the three or more bumpers and rack up points really quickly that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, you know, the ball could go careening into a drop target, which is a little object, I guess, made of probably plastic or wood, that when the ball hits it, it drops into the table and gives you the according number of points. You can't hit it again because it's gone.
Right.
But
if you hit all of the drop targets along a certain section, it'll reactivate and
it'll give you a bonus of some sort.
Yeah,
usually.
And then all the targets will spring back up, and then you'll have them to hit again. But you have to knock them all down, or sometimes after a ball drains, it'll reset the board.
Mm-hmm. Versus a standard target or stand up target, I'm sorry, which is, you know, usually a lot of times they're round.
Yeah.
Be like a lollipop. They're, you know, on some kind of, something mounted to the table itself, but they don't go anywhere. They
yeah,
just register
the
hits.
Some, yeah. And it does this usually through, depending on how old the machine is. If it's an older machine, it's usually a leaf switch.
Yeah, yeah.
And a leaf switch is, here's an easy example. Think of two strips of copper, mm-hmm. all right, that are close to one another. They're parallel. And on one end, you have the two strips embedded in an insulating material.
Yes.
All right.
And, so it's sort of like a V.
Yeah, yeah. And then on the other end, you've got the two freestanding strips of copper. When they come into contact with one another, it creates a circuit, and it activates like a switch. That's the whole concept of the leaf switches. Whenever the two pieces of copper come into contact, that means that it has registered mm-hmm. something. It's
yeah.
registered the contact. So a lot of the old electromechanical pinball machines use leaf switches to register contact along various parts of the board. And it may be everything from a stand-up target like you were mentioning, or it could be a switch that's on the actual playing field so that when the ball rolls over a certain point, it makes a contact and creates some sort of reaction, whether that's more points or changing the mode of play or whatever. And that's really what the older machines rely on. Newer ones have things called micro switches,
yes,
which are similar to the leaf switches, but they are self-contained. They're usually protected in a little case, and they're smaller and they're more sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
So
don't upset them or they'll cry.
That's not what I meant, but sure. They're less likely to malfunction, to break down.
Mm-hmm.
Here's an example. I used to play – there was a game that I played while I was in college. It was an older pinball machine. Don't assume when I start talking about this pinball machine that it was new when I was playing it in college. It was a Star Trek pinball machine from the 70s, and it was an electromechanical pinball machine. And it had a sensor in the upper left corner of the playing field that would register when you would roll the ball over it. It would start accumulating points toward an extra ball.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the one that we had in our student center, which I guess was donated by either a student or a former student, the sensor would stick. So if you could get the ball to roll over it once or twice, it would stick long enough for it to register as an extra ball. So anyone who knew how that machine would work would – the very first thing they would do is aim to get the ball up in that upper left-hand part of the playing field, because as soon as you registered an extra ball, you could play the ball as recklessly as you like, because once it drained, you got another ball to play. And then, again, as soon as you got the extra ball, aim for the upper left. After a couple of hits, you would get another extra ball, and these games could last forever. I actually managed to turn that game. I went over the top, as they say.
Over the top.
Yeah, I went over the top and reset the score back to zero. By the way, once I did that, it did not register it as a high score anymore.
Yeah.
That was kind of a bummer.
Yep.
Took me about an hour and a half, I think, total. And I had more than 16 free games racked up after I was done. Good times.
So yeah, there are other new technologies.
That's good.
There are other new technologies too that have been made possible with advanced electronics, such as the optoelectronic sensor.
Yes.
Which basically records what the ball is doing with light.
Yeah. There's also proximity sensors that use magnets.
Yes. So, basically the same kind of doohickey that registers whether or not your car is sitting there at the light. Because it basically identifies when a ball has passed over it without there needing to be a physical switch.
Right. It changes the electron flow through the circuit. We should say, however, that when I said it uses magnets, I really should have said it uses magnetic fields. It doesn't really use a magnet, because a common complaint among pinball users is that, oh, this thing must have magnets to make it drain so quickly.
Yeah.
Out of all the research I've done, all the magnets that are used in these pinball machines are used in such a way that either the player has control of it, or it is a specific mode that gets activated within a pinball game, and they're all electromagnets. And otherwise, there are no magnets in pinball. There aren't any magnets in pinball machines specifically designed to make the ball drain faster.
No. Mm-mm.
Despite what you might think as you're playing and cursing.
Yeah. Well, these devices that we're talking about are used more commonly in what's known as solid state games,
yes.
which are the heavily electronic type machines that you
right.
see, you know, you started seeing in the late 70s, early 80s and into the 1990s, where it would usually be more than, you know, they didn't have the numbers, the mechanical numbers that would flip over anymore.
Right. The digit counters
moved more.
Say.
Yeah. It's not even an LED. They're actually using plasma displays. Some of which had electronic games baked into them.
Yeah. Actually, Well, just to differentiate a little more, the electromechanical pinball machines, they used a lot of switches, they used motors, scoring wheels, which would, that would be like the digit counters, where each number, each digit was on its own wheel that would turn as you accumulated points, and the number of wheels it had would essentially tell you how high your score could go before turning back over to zero. And stepping units, relays, that kind of thing. So lots of electronic,
electromagnetic stuff?
Not electromagnetic stuff, but stuff you would find in basic electronics. That's what were in the old pinball machines.
Yes. I'm sorry. Electromechanical stuff is what I'm
yes.
saying.
Solid state would be more things like circuit boards and micro switches, things that are, that don't rely on so many moving parts necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
And as for displays, instead of the score wheels, you might have, the most common were dot matrix displays.
Yeah.
To use dots to indicate what the, what was going on, you know, your score. You might have a special video mode, like you were saying, a little mini game pop up. Some had LED displays. The segmented plasma displays were a little different. They weren't like a plasma display, like a HDTV.
No.
It was,
no.
Plasma would illuminate a small segment of the scoreboard. And that could form either letters or numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like a neon sign is kind of what they look like. It wasn't that you would necessarily get a very high def experience from it.
Yeah, because people associate plasma these days with high definition.
Now,
no, not so much.
Pinball had kind of a rocky road to go through. Do you know that some places outlawed pinball machines?
Yes, because they, by giving away free games, they were gambling.
Yeah, the idea here is that you would have to pay to play a pinball machine. Therefore, playing pinball has a value,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
Let's say it's a quarter. So it's a quarter of play. That means that you have assigned the value of the experience of playing the pinball machine to 25 cents. If you were to win a replay that is a free game, that means that they've just given away a 25-cent experience. Therefore, you have gambled.
Yes.
You gambled to win another game. Most of us would consider this crazy, and eventually almost everyone did consider this crazy, and they decided that it wasn't really that big a deal. But for a while, it was a big deal when gambling there were crackdowns on gambling across the United States and in other parts of the world, too.
Although in Japan, pachinko is such a big deal, and you can actually win prizes, and in some cases, people who are professional pachinko players can actually make decent money playing pachinko. So not everybody is
some pinball machines actually did reward people with coins or mm-hmm. or credits or things like that, something beyond just the free game. So there were games that did have more of a gambling element to them than just the free play. Let's talk about some of the other things that you might find in pinball machines, depending on what you're playing. There are lots of different variations because, I mean, of course, you've got your basic board, which is your elevated, your tilted playing field so that gravity pulls the ball downward.
Right.
You've usually got some bumpers. You might have the slingshots at the bottom and the flippers. You've got a plunger that allows you to propel the ball up to the top of the playing field so that you can start play. And then you got the drain at the bottom.
Yeah.
But on top of this, there have been lots and lots of innovations for pinball machines to kind of differentiate them from everything else.
Yeah.
So you've got things like spinners, sections of the playing field that spin around and around depending on, you know, some might spin the entire game. Some might spin if you activate a certain switch, and that can alter the course of a pinball as it rolls across. You've got ramps.
Yes.
Those are very basic. You got ramps that will lead to possibly another section of the playing field, or even another separate playing field that is otherwise inaccessible from the regular playing field.
Right.
You've got different lanes that the ball can go down. Often these lanes will have lights above them that are activated. And in some games, you can manipulate where the lights are using the flippers. And if you light all the lanes, then you get some sort of bonus.
Mm-hmm.
You've got various kickers, which are holes that the ball can go down and then it'll kick it back out.
I love those.
Yeah. And there are a lot that where you might knock a ball in a hole on one part of the playing field and the ball will come out in a totally different part of the playing field.
Yeah. That reminds me of a one of my favorite devices in a pinball game, which is really very little to do with the experience, but it's just weird. The knocker.
Oh, yes. When you hit a replay, it's a solenoid that's inside the actual pinball machine. And the only thing it's supposed to do is hit against the side of the pinball machine to make a really loud knocking noise. And it indicates that you have won a replay. It was way louder than that.
Well, yeah, it was. Yeah, yeah, so, it was the same. They had one in, I think, in the Qbert video game, too, if I'm not mistaken, when he'd fall off.
Oh, a solenoid.
Suddenly, you'd hear this, you know, you'd feel, and the joystick that you used to manipulate the game, you would feel this, you know, whack.
Yeah.
It's what is doing that?
Well, often it can be very loud and very, very
disconcerting.
Disconcerting, yeah. You'd be in the middle of a, and you'll hear it usually either if you've earned a replay by hitting a certain score or if you hit a match at the end. And match is where you see a random, set of numbers. It's usually, a 1 through 0 followed by a 0.
Yeah.
And if they match the last two digits on your score, you get a replay.
Mm-hmm.
You may suspect that people fiddle with the odds because usually you would think 1 in 10 chance, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There are a lot of machines that can allow you to fiddle with the odds and lower it to as low as 1% chance of it landing on what you actually scored.
Well, I'll get back into that in a minute. But
yeah.
I also wanted to mention another feature that you can't see in games.
Are you going
to
talk about tilting?
Yes. You're not ready for tilting?
No, let's talk about tilting.
Well, in the early games, like Bagatelle, you needed to tilt the game table to actually get the ball to move, where that was, you know, in some of those games.
Yeah.
But in pinball machines, they didn't want you to do that because, you know, for one thing, they didn't want you to get more play than you should be getting for your quarter.
But for another, there are a lot of different parts in these pinball machines, and some of them are kind of delicate. And
yeah, there's a very good reason that you really don't want to tilt it too much. So they added what's called a tilt bob, which is essentially a pendulum inside a metal ring.
Yeah.
So as soon as you tilt the game more than just a little bit, the pendulum is going to strike the ring, which is going to cause the machine to tilt.
Yeah, it's kind of like the game Operation. If the tweezers in the game Operation touches the side, then the guy's nose lights up, and then you've killed a patient. So every time you tilt a pinball machine, some patient dies. I might have mixed that up a little.
Okay. Well, that's one kind of mechanism. There's also a ball roll tilt.
Yes, this is a ball that's in a little channel underneath the playing field.
Mm-hmm.
And at the top of the channel, it's aligned in the same way as the playing field. So it's on an incline.
Yeah.
And at the upper end is a sensor. And if the ball should come in contact with a sensor, that triggers a tilt.
Yeah. And that's moving that is generally going to cause what's known as a slam tilt.
These are very bad.
Yeah.
For one thing, they can damage a machine, and for another, it's just considered bad form.
Yeah. A slam tilt is basically they're telling you that you really messed up because not only – I mean in a regular tilt, you would lose your points and the flippers don't move.
Right.
So it's like, dude, no, you lost it.
Yeah, yeah, it'll kill everything on the playing field. The ball will drain. You won't get any bonus, and you won't continue to score for that round.
Yeah, but in a slam tilt, it actually resets the machine. This is, you know, generally a solid state era. Device.
And there are other sensors that can also trigger a slam tilt. Usually, they are located mostly in the coin slot area, like anywhere where the coins are collected. That's usually where you're going to find a sensor for a slam tilt.
Yeah. You don't want to mess with the but I mean, if you really enjoy pinball, you don't want to break the machine. So there's that too. You really don't want to tilt it for that reason.
Yeah.
So should I get into the demise of pinball real quick?
Yeah, let's talk about the way pinball's kind of fallen apart recently, and then let's do a little bit of talk about some of our favorite pinball machines before we wrap up.
Okay. Well, a few months ago, I did a blog post because I happened to hear Jeff Eli, an economics professor at Northwestern University, on the radio. And he had written – he's an economist, but he wrote a post on pinball because he is also a pinball aficionado. And he met somebody who had designed two of his favorite games, Black Knight and High Speed. And those were some of the earliest, serious, digital high-end pinball machines, some of the, that really got going. And it goes back to what you were talking about, Jonathan, because over the course of pinball history, I mean, you think about it, we're going from a gravity only game to something that has flippers that you can, put the ball back into play. It's got electronic switches that enable you to rack up lots and lots of points. They're trying to add new gimmicks to keep you playing, keep you spending money on pinball. Well, so they start adding these ramps and, you know, the habit trails that the ball goes through.
Right.
And the little, you know, get it in the monster's mouth and he'll spit the ball back out kind of stuff.
Funhouse.
Yeah, there you go. All kinds of stuff like that to get you to keep playing and enhance the experience. Well, some people got so good at the game that they could win free replays often.
Mm-hmm.
So, the pinball manufacturers start enabling the, amusement facilities owners to adjust the odds of getting a replay by doing the number match thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the more people, I mean, it stopped people from exploiting the game by being really, really good at it, but it also kept new people from entering, and because it was so difficult for them to score a replay that they weren't interested in playing anymore.
You also started seeing circuit boards eventually that could adjust the score that was needed to get a replay.
Yep.
It would just incrementally increase. So if people were getting lots of replays, it would keep upping that score to make it more and more challenging to get a replay.
Yeah, because they figured you were going to keep pumping coins into it anyway.
And of course,
you're just going to keep playing. So why should we give it you a free game?
There's also the whole 3-ball versus 5-ball thing where you could set it to either be a 3-ball game or a 5-ball game. And of course, if you found a 5-ball game, you say, all right, I'm going to be here. This is what I'm going to play.
Yeah.
But yeah, it did set the bar pretty high. And it didn't help that there were other pinball machines that started coming out that really catered to the hardcore pinball enthusiast. I mean, it meant that the pinball enthusiasts they loved it,
mm-hmm.
but it acted as a barrier for anyone who wanted to play pinball, but didn't understand all the different modes and all the different tricks you needed to do in order to score well. So it just became a confusing experience for anyone who wanted to get into pinball. So that also really hurt the game overall.
Add to that the rise of video games, especially really good video games, and temporary demise of the video game market. A lot of the people that were making video games were also making pinball machines. So when the coin-operated arcade sort of went out of style there for a while, some of the people who were making pinball machines failed. Some of them merged and then failed.
Right.
And now, a few years ago, there were only two companies. Now, Stern Pinball is the only company that's
still making pinball machines.
Pinball machines here. And, you know, I don't know of anybody else.
Gosh, I miss
worldwide,
those old Bally and Williams games.
They were fantastic. They were so much fun.
Let's talk a little bit about some of our favorites.
Okay.
One of my favorites is also one of the games that actually, I think, contributed to the downfall of pinball.
Yeah.
And in fact, even the creator of the game would tell you that, and it's Twilight Zone.
Oh, yeah?
Twilight Zone was an amazing pinball machine, but it also was one of those that was really geared for the hardcore pinball enthusiasts. So people like me, we love Twilight Zone, but anyone who just came up to play it would get really frustrated pretty quickly and then never play pinball again. And the designer for Twilight Zone was Pat Lawler.
Mm-hmm.
Pat Lawler is kind of a legend in the pinball field, even though really he came in on the scene pretty late. He wasn't like one of the people who shaped what pinball is, but he designed some of the greatest pinball machines from the, you know, late 80s and into the 90s and up to today.
Yeah.
And Twilight Zone was one of them. And he actually said that, yeah, they thought they didn't have any real limits on what they could do, because before he built Twilight Zone, he built the Addams Family pinball machine.
Oh, yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
Which is my all-time favorite machine ever. One of the best pinball machines ever, in my opinion. And it was so successful that they essentially had an open sky to design Twilight Zone. Mm-hmm. And he said that was the problem. It was because they were allowed to do anything. They put everything in it and then made it so complicated that only the hardcore enthusiast wanted to play it.
Yeah.
But also he designed Funhouse, which had Rudy, the talking ventriloquist dummy head that would insult you as he played the game, and you could knock the ball into his mouth and activate multi-ball that way, and it was pretty cool. My other favorites were Theater of Magic, Medieval Madness, Monster Bash, Junkyard. I loved Tommy, the Who's Tommy.
Yeah.
Had a mode where as you're playing, a shield would come up and block your view of the flippers, so you had to play blind.
Oh, nice.
I actually would use the – there was a way you could start off that way and just play the whole game blind, and mm-hmm. that's how I would play because mm-hmm. I'm hardcore. And there's one other game I want to mention, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, not because it was awesome, but because it gave you the chance to choose which music you wanted to play. You could either play the soundtrack from Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, or you could play Edgar Winter's Frankenstein.
Oh, nice.
I think you know which one I chose.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Dun, 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 dun. That's all I can hum of that before we have to pay.
Yeah.
Your turn.
It's funny because Internet Pinball Database actually lists most of your favorites in the top 10 of all player-rated games.
Yeah, they are awesome games.
Twilight Zone being number one and Adam's Family being two.
Those would be the solid-state games, I would guess, not
yes,
the electromechanical
yes.
ones.
No, they have a separate list for electromechanical
yeah.
ones. Mine, actually, High Speed. I really loved High Speed, which kind of makes me sad now because that was one of the ones that I really, really enjoyed playing. And then now I know it was sort of
the beginning of the end.
But I also loved Space Shuttle. That was one of the games that I played all the time when I was growing up. It just happened to be a lot of those machines floating around out there, almost as if in zero G. But now I feel like going roller skating in Cherry Knee High simply because, you know, this whole pinball thing is bringing that up. So,
and, you know, there are a lot of places on the web where you can read about the care and maintenance of pinball machines. And there are auctions out there where you can purchase pinball machines.
Oh, yeah, you can still buy them.
Yeah, you can find them on sale. I would be very careful about buying them just to make sure, you know, you've got a reputable seller before you engage in something like that.
Yeah.
And, definitely look into the whole maintenance issue, too, because these machines do require a lot of upkeep to keep them running smoothly.
Yeah.
There's just a lot of moving parts there. And things do need to be replaced and repaired over time. So
yeah.
it's a really cool thing if you want to pick up a hobby, especially if you're interested in electronics. They're expensive and they do require a lot of work. So keep that in mind.
Yeah. We need to close up here, but I wanted to tell you that if you haven't seen the episode of How It's Made on Science Channel that tells you how pinball machines are made, there is a clip from that on howstuffworks.com, and I totally recommend that you see it because it's really interesting. You'll see when they pull the, you know, when they're putting the playing surface together that, the whole underneath of it is just like spaghetti with all the wires and gadgets and stuff that it takes to do it. But it's fascinating stuff to see how they actually have to wire everything together. And also, if you are interested in buying a machine and really thinking about the maintenance involved, scare the crud out of you.
Right.
I have to deal with that.
Yeah.
It's a lot of stuff. It's a mess. It's a lot.
So check out our article. You can find that at howstuffworks.com. Check out our blogs. You can find a link to that on howstuffworks.com. Remember that Chris and I do a live show every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern. So that's also, you can find links to that on, hey, what's that website?
Howstuffworks.com.
Thank you, Chris. And if you want to ask us any questions or send us suggestions, anything like that, write us at techstuff@howstuffworks.com, and we will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedena. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.